Good day, citizens of the free world, from border to border, coast to coast, and to all the ships at sea. I bring you a warm welcome. This is your correspondent, Jim Tate, and thank you for tuning in to this edition of the Tate Chronicles. Join me as we cut through the fog that exists at the leading edge of healthcare technology. Our mission is simple. We're searching for beneficial disruption in healthcare from emerging technologies. I'm very excited today. My guest is Ray Dogham. Ray wears two hats. He's a podcaster at Health Unchained and a project lead at American Well. I met Ray for the first time at a recent distributed health conference in Nashville. Ray, thanks for joining me and our audience on this episode of the Tate Chronicles.
Jim, thank you very much for having me on the show, and it was great meeting you at Distributed Health. It was an awesome conference, and really excited to be speaking with you today.
You know, it really was a good conference. I've been to a lot of blockchain, healthcare, technology type conferences. There was a lot of meat there, and we're kind of in that place with blockchain and distributed ledger technology and healthcare, where the wheat's kind of being separated out from the chaff. And so that was an opportunity where there was a lot of threshing going on. Really what I want to focus on today, Ray, is, at your podcast site, Health Unchained. Right. And by the way, is the URL healthunchained.com?
It's actually healthunchained.org.
Okay, healthunchained.org. You conduct interviews and conversations very similar to the way I do with professionals, providers who really are working on blockchain, healthcare-related technologies.
Yeah, so that's right. So I've been actually started the podcast I think it was May of 2018. I had the idea actually last year in 2017, late last year, and I was thinking about I was watching Bitcoin and Ethereum prices go through the roof, and everyone was just really excited about it. And at the time, I was working at America Well and looking at the healthcare industry in particular. And I realized how important blockchain technology is going to be in our future, not just in the financial sector. I knew that it had to also play a part in just general security and privacy of data. And I thought there was a huge gap in the healthcare industry where security and privacy, we have laws and regulations around it, but I don't think the technology is really there for us to be able to use the data we want to. Sure, data can be secure as much as you want, but how useful can it be if it's siloed in one health system software or EHR? It's going to be, I think it'll be much more interoperable on a blockchain network. And that's kind of the reason why I started thinking about doing the podcast. And I realized, I don't really know too much about this, so why don't I talk to people? And why just talk to people? I can record the conversations and put them online and write about it a little bit and kind of
absolutely
make
sure
other people aware of it. So that's kind of a...
Sure. And how do you decide who to interview? Just who you find interesting and you reach out to them? How do you make
that decision? Yeah, that's a good question. So at first, I kind of just went online and did some research on different companies, and there weren't as many when I first started. There were about a few dozen, and I, my first podcast actually was with Raj Sharma from HealthWiz, and he was really excited about it, and he actually helped me recruit another guest, and then it kind of just built out from there. There were other people who were interested, and I went to conferences, and from conferences I was able to secure some recordings and episodes. And there was actually an article, so I think it was published in March. It was titled "The Top 12 Companies Bringing Blockchain to Healthcare So Far." So I've actually interviewed half those companies. So I was excited that I was able to do that, and I'm planning to do the rest of them next year, hopefully.
Well, it's fantastic, kid. Blockchain healthcare is such a new initiative that I find when I reach out to people and tell them that I hope they're willing to share their thoughts and their ideas and what they're working with, they usually jump at the opportunity because they want to spread the information, and this is a good way to do it. Do you do your podcasts and release them on a regular basis or just when you have a new one? What's your schedule?
Yeah, so I first started out trying to publish every week, but realized that was a bit aggressive, and I cut it down to twice a month. So every other Monday, I publish a new episode. I publish it on SoundCloud, and it also gets distributed into multiple platforms, including iTunes, Google Play. I'm actually on Spotify now, which is kind of exciting. And also, you can play it directly from my website if that's easier. You don't have to download any apps or
Sure.
anything.
Let me back up. And you are pretty far up that initial steep learning curve about blockchain applications and potential. What are your personal views of the potential for blockchain for some specific use cases in healthcare? A year or so ago, what we were seeing was, well, in the summer of 2017, I guess, pretty easy for a company to have an idea, release a white paper, and sell tokens and make a few million dollars or tens of millions of dollars without giving up any equity. Those days are gone. And it
Right.
seems like we're down to the real work. And so where do you see that real work going for blockchain healthcare? What are some applications you think are meaningful?
Yeah, no, I agree. It's kind of funny how the market works. It fluctuates quite violently. So right now we're kind of in a low period. And in terms of applications, I think the primary use case for blockchain in general is security and privacy. So, and that kind of cascades into other applications. So in order to have your data secure and private, you're going to need a system where, it's not being stored on one centralized network or server. And that's one place where blockchain can provide that kind of distributed network. But why, right? The question would be, who cares? What about keeping your data security or your data secure and private? Well, that's the thing with healthcare. People want to use data to benefit the patient. However, they also are trying to make the data secure so they're not at risk for violating any HIPAA laws or anything like that. So I think blockchain can play a role in actually enabling better privacy for patients, but also allowing for the data to be shared in a more efficient manner. So, and then you could talk about genomics as a huge application, using AI to have, to diagnose or potentially to, discover new treatments for patients that might not have been, thought about or seen before.
Just kind of to follow up on that a little bit, Ray. One thing that fascinates me is with blockchain, just in general, and healthcare applications of it specifically. It reminds me of the early days of the internet, where we knew this thing was going somewhere, but we had no idea where it was going.
Right, yeah.
And just trying to decide where we are in this whole trajectory, where it goes to where it's going to go and then settles down, and then it just goes into the background and it just becomes part of business to business or business to consumer or however it rolls out there. I see some great potential in existing B2B applications. They've been talked about quite a bit, things that don't require really giant cultural changes. An example is maybe supply chain of pharmaceuticals or professional credentialing. To me, things like that are just a slam dunk, giant advantage using blockchain technology. But we see a lot of companies coming up with maybe a personal health record and they're blockchaining it in some way. But for those to work, people are going to have to want to do their own PHR. And so that takes a cultural shift or a personal shift. And we don't know if that's going to happen. It hadn't happened in the last 10 years that people are really going to track their health records, whether it's blockchained or not. So.
Right. No, that's a good point. And I think PHRs, personal health records, they've gotten a lot of bad rap for a while. Google, Google, Microsoft, many other companies have tried it like a decade ago and failed. I think now with blockchain, at least you have this incentivization mechanism to potentially make PHR successful. I'm not sure how
Yes.
or when it might be successful, but that's a new variable to this equation, I think. So providing tokens or something of value to the user for, keeping track of their own records. But, it's still not guaranteed that it'll work. And when you're thinking about the more B2B applications, I do think that will be most likely implemented much sooner than these kind of consumer applications. So things like supply chain pharma. One really important application, I think, is provider credentialing, like you mentioned, but just within states. You know, looking at my experience at America Well, which it's a company that provides telehealth solutions, you know, all over the country. So we also have a organization called the Online Care Group, where we employ physicians to service our patients. And the thing that's most difficult that I've heard about, at least, or like noticed, I don't personally work with the Online Care Group directly, but credentialing different physicians in different states, it's such a process. Every state has a different form, and it's just a time-consuming and resource-consuming effort. And I think that it doesn't really need to be, probably. I don't know too much of the details, but I do know that if we were able to share that information more freely and at the same time protect the provider's privacy, I think that would just make things more streamlined and just lubricate the entire process.
Absolutely. It's a very manual back office process now. Mm-hmm. And you can really see how blockchain could just totally disrupt that and make it much smoother. You mentioned incentivizing patients, and that's something I'm really fascinated by now, whether it's incentivizing or monetizing. I've interviewed a few companies, and you probably have also, Ray, who are working in that area. One thing in particular, we know a lot of the consumer-based DNA testing organizations, 23andMe, Ancestry.com, their real business model is licensing that DNA data, and it's licensed for hundreds of millions of dollars. And the person whose DNA sample, a data file, is being licensed doesn't get any of that whatsoever. And so there are some companies that have started up where you can take your download from the consumer-based DNA companies, download that file, upload it to these other companies, and then receive tokens based on the licensing of your data. Now, it won't become practical until there's enough DNA files sitting there for a research organization or a pharmaceutical organization to come in and license it. I love that application. Will it take off?
Yeah.
We just don't know. We just don't know, but it's a beautiful application.
I mean, absolutely. I think the whole idea of being able to own your entire genome, and it's nice, but right now we're at a point where we still don't understand it enough to make it valuable. However, looking forward, you know, 3 to 5 years, we are going to be more knowledgeable about our, you know, DNA and have a lot more insight into what makes us tick. And I think that being able to own it is going to be a real advantage. And I think companies that allow you to own your own data are going to be more successful than the ones that don't. And right now, 23andMe, for example, has an advantage because they have a lot of users who have already, you know, sent their DNA to the company, and they've created a really nice UI and surveys that makes it really kind of fun and easy to use. So that's one thing that they do have as an advantage. I've interviewed two companies that are doing something on the blockchain related to genomics and allowing the people to own their own data. One is EncryptGen, which actually allows you to take your 23andMe raw data and upload it into their blockchain platform, and then using that genotyping information, you'll be able to potentially earn money or DNA tokens by sharing your data with researchers. What's interesting about the other company that I interviewed, Nebula Genomics, I actually interviewed George Church, who's a co-founder there, is they're focusing on whole genome sequencing. So it's a much richer data set. However, all the applications of what it could do have not been seen yet. So it's still kind of early for that. I think it's a great idea to get started early, because your DNA is not really going to change now versus in 5 years. It's kind of, in a way, immutable. Although there is research saying there's potentially ways you can It's a gray science, you know.
Well, that data and you know, the ownership of personal health data, and I'm putting a DNA data in, you know, as part of somebody's personal health record. U.S. law, and I think it was recently, or I don't know how recently settled, you may know more than I do about this, right, by the Supreme Court, that that's not considered private property. So somebody, just how, like how Facebook can gather information on us as we use Facebook and then sell it, the same thing is true about healthcare data. As long as it's, quote, de-identified, and de-identified, what that meant 10 years ago is not the same thing it means now, because it's pretty easy to, even without somebody's name and social security number, you can find out who they are. But until that legislation would actually be passed in this country, where it's considered private property, there's still going to be this giant business model out there. And I will say one thing, the consumer DNA testing organizations, every one of them has a way to opt out of having your DNA licensed by them. Mm-hmm. And so most people don't know it. Most people don't do it. And so over 80% of folks just leave it sitting there, and companies make money off of it. I also interviewed the co-founder Encryption, and took my DNA file and took it over and uploaded it there. So it's going to be, we don't know how early we are in the whole process, but what a perfect blockchain application. We'll see if it grows wings and flies. I hope it does.
Right. Yeah, me too. I think it's also, you know, it's a two-sided market, or at least a two-sided market, because you're going to have researchers that are interested in these people's DNA as well. And it's not just the DNA, it's also the information you provide with DNA as the context, right? So they also want to know, you know, what disease do you have currently, or tell me more information about your demographics. And there's going to be some level of user input as well, or consumer input, surveys and whatnot.
Right. One thing also is the folks that send in their sample, like me, and I don't know if you have, but to these consumer-based testing entities, they're really coming from a small subset of the global population. And so it's really not a cross-section of DNA around the planet. We'll see.
That's true. Yeah, so that's true. Yeah. I actually have sent my my sample over to 23andMe. It's actually been about 6 years ago. This was really when it first started, and when they were giving out pretty good deals. And I was, one Christmas, they had a sale, and I was like, sure, I got one for myself and for my brother and for my parents. And you know, it was kind of fun to just look at, but there was very little information they provided us. I think, you know, they told me I was you know, some percent Middle Eastern, some percent white, and I don't actually remember, but it's something that I should remember, right? But I didn't really think much of it at the time, because, like you said, the data set was still small enough where the probability of, you know, I don't know how statistically valid it was. So
correct. Yeah.
Right.
I mean, to be able to get a wide variety of DNA. You would think that selective DNA harvesting, for lack of a better term, everybody who has a certain diagnosis be able to get their DNA and separate out and kind of work at that level. But the application of people having control and ownership of their data, because that data is valuable. It's extremely valuable. There's no doubt about that whatsoever. Let me take a couple steps back before we totally run out of time. We've been on over 20 minutes already. Time's flying by. And talk about kind of some of the technical things. So we had the big cryptocurrency run up a year ago, and they've all come down some 100%. Ethereum and Bitcoin, 70, 80. Bitcoin, I mean, Ethereum may be down 90% or close to it or more. Some of the applications are waiting for platforms like Ethereum to be able to really scale. And so Ethereum has not been able to scale as far as number of transactions it can handle a second. There keeps being a promise, and there is a roadmap out there But we thought it might happen in 2017, then maybe 2018, and now we're looking at 2019. It looks like some of those initially favored blockchain platforms like Ethereum, some developers are kind of moving away from to some collateral blockchain. What are your thoughts about Ethereum and delay and scaling, or does it even matter at this point?
Yeah, it's a good question. I don't have a lot of good opinions about it, to be honest. I think that there are different protocols, main blockchain protocols, or like base blockchains, I guess you can call them, that are out there now. Ethereum's obviously one of the biggest ones. Neo, EOS.
Yes. Yeah.
There's a few out there, and it's Nebulous, I think, is interesting. I've kind of been agnostic about which one will be successful, or if multiple ones will be successful. I think the primary driver for success is, number of developers that are actually building on it. I think the scalability projects that they've announced or they've been talking about for a while, I don't think it's still out of the question. I think, these things do take time, and life happens, and it just takes some time to get back on track, or, build Plasma or whatever. But I think if they, if it lasts, if it continues to last as it is, I think, it'll still be, Ethereum will still be a primary blockchain for like smart contracts. I don't know if it'll be good for all use cases, and maybe you want to use something with a delegative proof of stake for some other use cases. I'm not sure. I think that it has a solid argument for it, but we'll see. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure.
Yeah, right. And it's going to be fascinating in a few years to look back.
Definitely.
You may not remember it, but I've got a few years on you, Ray. And so I remember when the first video recorders came out, and there was VHS and Betamax from Sony. And hands down, technically, in every other way, Betamax was a superior format. But VHS got machines out there at a better price point, and the better product technically disappeared, Betamax totally. And so we'll see who survives in this jungle going forward. So definitely the scalability and be able to do a lot of transactions at a low cost is going to be critical. And I think probably the more developers working on Ethereum platforms than any other right now. So I think they've got another year or two to get those major foundational elements satisfied. But it's critical that they be satisfied, because
agree.
It can't support a real robust application. If somebody, it's kind of funny, if somebody has been following blockchain developments and learning about it for 6 months, they know a lot about it compared to, nobody knows has been in it for 5 years or 3 years. Hardly anybody's been in it for 2 years. If somebody wanted to get up to speed, there's so much to ignore with all the cryptocurrencies and stuff. What is some ways you think that if a friend came to you and say, "How do I get up to speed about this blockchain stuff? Where do I go? What kind of resources?"
Well, honestly, I'd probably just go to Wikipedia and check out what blockchain means. It's got a lot of, basic and general explanations of what it is and how it's built, and it's pretty, easy to understand, I think. And from there, you could branch out. There are tons of resources online. There's tons of communities online. So if you can look at GitHub communities, Telegram has many communities, Slack. So any company or startup that looks interesting most likely has its own community. So there's a place where you can go to ask questions. If you are thinking about specifically in healthcare applications, I think Hashed Health is a great resource. They produce content and have a great website, and I think they're very legitimate in what they're talking about, and very practical and realistic about what to expect. You can also listen to my podcast, of course. That's another place where you get some information. And I frequently tweet different articles and share my opinions on things. So
what's your Twitter handle? What's your Twitter handle?
Yeah. Right. It's at Health Unchained, but there's no E before the at the end of it. So it's Health Unchained. If you give me a search, you'll find it. Yeah.
Okay, great. Well, I agree with you. Wikipedia is a good first place to start. And I really agree with you that the information is coming out of Hashed Health, John Bass and those fellas. They have integrity and they've been through the, you know, up and down cycle. And if you follow them, you'll have a sense of what's happened in the real world kind of moving forward. Right.
One last thing I actually wanted to, one thing I wanted to add as well. There is a database resource that I found that actually has a lot of the healthcare blockchain projects available, and they're like sorted by function and as well as their industry. Yeah, so their industry focus. Sorry, their industry focus and their function. So they talk about, you know, for example, PHRs and genomics as a industry focus, and function meaning like, is it a marketplace? Is it a data science analytics firm? Is it a payments and claims, you know, smart contracts type of firm? So it's really nice. There's over 150 companies on that site. And if you go to db.biomedicalblockchain.org, you can find that there. And one last thing, actually, I have an agreement with Simply Vital Health, and they've agreed to provide a discount to anyone who wants to have a blockchain healthcare course on their Udemy course online. So if you are interested or if any of your listeners want to take that course, it's primarily for non-technical people that are in the healthcare space and just trying to learn. So they can go to udemy.com and search for healthcare and blockchain. It should be the first result. And just type in Health Unchained for the promo code, and you'll get a $125 discount.
Well,
so just wanted to throw that out there. Yeah.
No, I appreciate that. Simply Vital, they are another credible organization that really you can take to the bank what they're saying. So no doubt about that. To our audience, thanks for joining me on this episode of the Take Chronicles. I offer a special salute to my guest today, Ray Dogham. Ray, thanks for coming on board.
Jim, it's a pleasure. Thank you.
Yep. You can find more information on the show's program page at healthcarenowradio.com. Until we meet again, here's wishing you smooth sailing and safe harbors.